We'll tap the brain of a man who owns a little-known repeater manufacturer in this RAIN report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the steamy confines of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this RAIN report. It's not often that any of us get the opportunity to sit down and converse with a repeater manufacturer. RAIN's Hap Holly, KC9RP, did just that at the 2015 Dayton Hamvention. Hap sat down with Ron Kohanowitz, KC0QVT, the man behind Bridgecom Systems, a manufacturer of amateur and commercial two-way radios and repeaters in Smithville, Missouri, since 2004. One reason Bridgecom Systems is unique is its recent venture into the 220 1.25-centimeter ham spectrum. We'll hear about that later. Here's our first excerpt from Hap's conversation in the RAIN booth with Ron Kohanowitz.
Your company puts a lot of its R&D into repeaters, either RF repeaters or repeaters that talk to each other via the internet and so forth. What do you bring to that industry that isn't there already?
That's a good question. It is a very competitive landscape, I'll say that. One of the things that I think we bring to the table that a lot of people find to be attractive is the customer support, the ability to answer people's questions quickly, the ability to make changes to software quickly and deploy those quickly. People like the idea that they can get on the phone with somebody that's knowledgeable about the equipment very quickly. A lot of people don't like to wait. Being stateside, we can make changes quickly for customer applications that are unique to them. And then also, we're very responsive to the market in that we've learned a lot about the amateur radio community and what people come to expect as far as feature sets and then, of course, new feature sets. There's a lot of third-party controllers that people put on repeaters. I can't even begin to count the number of controller manufacturers. They all have their unique ideas about linking, and it seems like, you know, everybody's got a niche of some sort, and we've tried to accommodate that, and that's something I think that we've specialized in as we've grown the business, is being able to meet the customer requirements and do it quickly, and I think that's what's key.
One of the selling points, if you will, of Elecraft is the fact that so much of its equipment is affected by the buyer. The buyer will buy the transceiver and find something that they really want to have in that radio. And they often get it. And it will come out maybe on the next revision of the transceiver. If I have a repeater from Bridgecom Systems and somebody comes up with a really good idea for a design change, do you make that available to me as a current user?
Within reason, yes. I mean, we can change the firmware in the repeater. The one unique thing about the repeater is it's upgradable, the firmware particularly, where we can make changes based on customer requirements. And if it's not too terribly complicated, we can usually deploy an update in a very short amount of time. The amount of time required to do things, if it's like an overhaul, that clearly is going to take a bit more time. But to be able to modify software and test it, and get something to market or get that demand met in a timely manner is something we can do, and I offer that service. It's all actually printed on our glossy for our repeaters. If there is a unique idea, we'll take that under consideration and see if we can implement that. We've tried to put everything we can into the repeater as we've grown the business. A lot of times when people buy the repeaters, everything that they need is already there because as we've grown, we've incorporated a lot of the common changes that people have asked for. The repeaters are basically an all-in-one package. We've got the power supply, the controllers built in to where we decode the subaudible tones. We also have a station ID. It's in Morse code, of course, that can send out their updates. But we also provide a 25-pin accessory connector where a club or an entity might want to attach their particular peripheral to the repeater to have it do what they want it to do. The special station ID is a good example. Weather controllers are another good example. I've not found anything I cannot connect the repeater to.
If I were involved with a repeater group and the group wanted to do something that I rarely see. In fact, I haven't seen this in the Chicago area since I did it back in the middle 80s with the a broadcast employee's amateur repeater, where I used to actually produce repeater IDs that were seasonal, and they were voiced by members, and they were mastered on an old Tascam Porta Studio cassette, and then eventually transferred onto broadcast chart machine and plugged into the chart machine that was interfaced to the repeater at that time.
Hi, this is April, N9GYG. While shopping this Yuletide season in the northwest suburbs, take your HD along, because we've got you covered. This is the Bear, the W9LOV repeater.
What if I today produce some IDs? Could I upload them to your controller and set it up to run at the top of each hour in a certain rotation? Is that possible?
It's possible. It's not going to happen inside the repeater. What you would do is simply connect this player or this external controller, if you will, to the 25-pin accessory connector. It has all the various inputs and outputs to be able to manage the repeater. It would be an outboard device and interface to the repeater. You would use the repeater as a slave device to that external controller or that playback device. And the playback device, it would tell the repeater how to function. A repeater is primarily a simple box, if you will, that does what it's asked to do, and it's a means by which to get information at a lower power to a very higher power. Your control devices can be as exotic as you want them to be, and that's the beauty of it. And then having that accessory port provides you that interface to be able to get as creative as you'd like.
That control device could be a Raspberry or a small computer that would store the IDs we're talking about.
Absolutely. That's a very good idea. You could effectively hook a Raspberry Pi or one of these newer embedded systems onto that that would be programmed up to update every hour, as you said, and play back whatever you want.
There is no speech in your box, right? Like the old ACC controllers had in them.
No, there's not. Just a simple Morse code station ID that can be programmed to update every certain interval at a certain word per minute as programmed by the user.
Have you found there's just not enough demand from the field to incorporate speech?
Oh, no, there's a lot of demand. It's just that that function is typically outsourced to another control device. We could, I suppose, embed that in the repeater, but I guess that's something we could think about. But at this point, it's really not been a requirement of the repeater as far as getting that exotic with building all of this into a repeater. But it's a good idea because most of these outboard controllers do have the voice IDing. They can send out weather updates and various things. And as you pointed out, Raspberry Pi could do a variety of different things to manage the transmitter of the repeater.
Today, with so many hams not knowing code, the Morse code idea doesn't mean anything, especially to a newcomer or someone who's passing through town, as opposed to speech in the repeater. And there are so many repeaters in the Chicago area that do use the speech option for that reason, and also because it adds a little more sense of personality to the repeater rather than just CW idea sending it 18, 20 words a minute, whatever it might be. Half the users can't copy anyway.
You know, as you stated that, a lot of light bulbs went off in my mind about what could be done with a repeater. And some of these repeaters out there, and I've been through towns where they're not very active, and I could see if you automated, put something that would incorporate an ID, because all you're doing simply with the Morse code is satisfying the FCC's mandate to update on at a certain interval. The CW was a very effective way of going about it, but let's say you can get creative, like for example with a radio station. I mean, they're doing the same exact thing, except they have a live person announcing the call sign pretty regular, and they build that into their shtick, if you will, announcing the call sign, and that effectively does the same thing. Well, I can imagine if that was all automated with some kind of playback device periodically would liven up the repeater and maybe more people would tune in, I suppose.
You're listening to our first excerpt from a 2015 Hamvention Rain Booth conversation between Bridgecom Systems founder Ron Kohanowitz, KC0QVT, and Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP. We'll resume their stream of consciousness in a moment. This is the Rain Report. Accessible via our blind-friendly website, therainreport.com, via Twitter at #therainreport, and from iTunes.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Now that so many repeaters are running PL, if I'm driving through Podunk, Iowa, I wonder if there's a real town called Podunk in Iowa, but Podunk, USA, and I key up a repeater, that's always a trick to know what PL it might be, because 95% of the time they don't tell you what PL they're using. In CW or otherwise, I am going to have a heck of a time trying to talk to anybody or add any kind of activity to that repeater while I'm in town for the weekend or for the week. And there I am struggling. Maybe I'm blind, which I am. Maybe I'm a blind hand that doesn't have access necessarily to the information I need for that area for what their regional PL might be, but if your controller is on that XYZ repeater and it can tell me this is the W1XYZ repeater, 1148 PL, something like that, then I know, oh yeah, okay, so I'm dialing that PL. Every radio sold today has PL. I dial that up, hey, suddenly I get in that repeater that I couldn't before.
You had some sort of application connected to a repeater, or built in, if you will, to our repeater, that would be made to send out a bit of information like that, then it would certainly awaken people to the availability of that repeater. And like you said, you would know exactly what to do. Then folks could effectively scan into this repeater as they're driving through or scouring through the repeater book or looking for opportunities to talk and meet people.
Or if that repeater has a net or something, depending upon how much the club wants to reveal about where it's located.
Hello, this is Bob, WA9SKJ. With received sites at Schaumburg and the lakefront, the Bears got you covered wherever you are. W9LOV repeater.
Oh, yeah, okay, I hear that repeater. What it tells me, it's only 8 miles away. Gee, I might be able to get into it with my handheld. I'm an information junkie, and so I really like it when the repeater tells me what's going on that machine.
Hi, this is Ed, WA9MNF. Do you take our hobby seriously? We do Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Bear Information Service here on the W9LOV repeater.
There's one repeater in Chicago that has 8 nets a week. Everything from an astronomy net to club net to an info net to Aries net, all that kind of stuff. What a great way to be able to advertise what's going on in your repeater verbally, just by using a simple voice chip. Well, nothing simple, but relatively speaking, and something that wouldn't take up much space.
You're touching on something that I see going on as a systems engineer, that the amount of computing power available to us today is just incredible. The systems on chips, the devices that are available now, to where a guy could quickly build up a system like you're talking about to manage, or I should say the storage space available to do these kinds of things, where if a guy or a gal could make broadcast infomercials, if you will, and then set them up to periodically update on a repeater, the space is available, the technology's there. It's a matter of just getting it done and making these applications available to the community. And these are some great ideas, and the computing power is available now to do that in a very less expensive way.
220 is close and dear to my heart, because I love 220. I'm very active with the 220 Good Guys in Chicago, 22452. You apparently feel there's a future for 220, and yet you can go hundreds of miles in rural areas and never find a 220 machine. And yet there are other repeaters that link via the internet. What do you see in 220 that maybe most manufacturers aren't? Not just the repeater perspective, but in the 220 mobile rig that you're designing.
I don't know if I can say that I see all that there is to see about it. I'm simply listening to the customer. The interest level is there for 220 equipment. We were able to satisfy that demand by quickly getting one to market. We had the wherewithal to procure the RF portions of the equipment. The one thing that, as I stated earlier, was the ability to quickly develop product from a software perspective, make the changes necessary, and quickly get a product to market. After being at the Dayton Hamvention last year, we were promoting our 2-meter and 70-centimeter repeaters, but we were asked by countless people if we offered a 220 machine. At the time, I was oblivious to the 220 spectrum, to be honest with you. I just didn't know that there was an interest in that. I mentally took note of that, and doing the things we do, we just kind of looked around and saw that there was opportunity to make one. What drove this was the amateur radio community that we learned of here at the Hamvention last year. I can tell you so far with the passersby of our trade show booth here that the demand is still there. What's driving it, I think, is whether it's the rural community or not, I don't know, but I know that in bigger areas where spectrum is hard to get a channel licensed up, a 220 channel is not very hard to get. Now, it depends on where you are, of course, but for the most part, you could get a 220 pair coordinated quickly rather than unavailable in the 2-meter or the 70-centimeter. Another thing that was made known is that people like the 1.25 band. As far as quality, it has some different characteristics, and I can't speak to that too terrible much other than what I've been told. It's not as congested on the RF spectrum. It looks like a fun band to play in for not only voice but also data. There's some data applications we're becoming aware of. I'm simply responding to the market at this point. It's actually quite exciting. It's opening up a lot of doors in our business that I never saw possible, and I think it has the potential to grow.
One of the challenges in ham radio overall for a blind user is effectively operating a VHF UHF radio. Let's say an Olenco DR-235, a very common and popular radio on 220 in the Chicago area. I am using a Olenco DR-235, but I can't use it real well because there are no beeps, there's no mechanical stops, no reference points that I can use. As far as using a 220 mobile in a car, I can't use that radio in a car anymore than I can anywhere else. Has there been any thought of putting a voice chip to make your 220 mobile, like the Kentwood TMV-71A, which I use for 2-meter and 440 in the car and at home. In fact, Kenwood is the only manufacturer that I know of that puts out radios that the blind user can really use and use pretty darn well. And that includes the HF radio, the TS-480. I'm not here to toot Kenwood's horn, and I'm not a brand loyal type ham. But boy, they put out radios that I can use. I would love to buy a 220 mobile if I can find one, knock on for Micah, if I can find one that will talk to me, or at least will have confirmation beeps that the Kenwood F6A handheld has, which operates on 220. It's not perfect by any means, but at least with the beeps, I can actually use pretty well because I have reference points. I've got default beeps where it's one frequency, a default, maybe a lower tone for receiver A and a higher tone for receiver B. In the PLs, a tone at zero PL, which is 67 point whatever in the F6A. I'm babbling here, but I am beseeching you as a 220 radio producer to give me a radio that I can use.
And that concludes our first excerpt from a 2015 Dayton Hamvention conversation with Ron Kohanowitz, KC0QVT, the mind behind Bridgecom Systems, and Hap Holly, KC9RP. We'll conclude this conversation with this systems engineer next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for all connected with the Rain Report, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com on the web, The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes.